The YouTuber and educator Hank Green asked a provocative question in the beginning of one of his YouTube movies. Should Batman kill the Joker? Now, if you were to ask the Dark Knight Batman himself, with his hard and fast no-killing rule, his answer would be, obviously not. No. When you think about it, the dude has a pretty, as Hank says, Kantian ethical paradigm. Shout out to my philosophy nerds in the room. But regardless of what the Joker does, there are some lines for Batman that good people do not cross. Killing them definitely falls on the wrong side of that line. But let's be real here. The fact that we have a new Joker movie every 2 years tells us that the Joker is never going to stop killing. Sure, Batman will throw him in jail. We all know that when he's out, and he always seems to get out, once he's free, he will kill again. He will maim and he will terrorize. So when he does, the question for us is, won't a little bit of that chaos, that killing, be Batman's fault? For he has been in the position to kill the Joker hundreds of times. He has had the power to save anyone from being a victim of the Joker again. It raises a fundamental philosophical question that if you have the ability to stop a killer and you don't, are you morally pure because you didn't kill? Or are you morally impure because you refused to do what needed to be done to help other people? And how would you know? What is true? What is false, what is right, and what is wrong? We are always and constantly faced with these questions as we engage in our lives. Hopefully you're not dealing with that specific one most days. But no matter who we are and what our life is made of, questions of ethics and morality and the decisions we make are as a part of the fabric of our life as breathing. Maybe right now you're struggling to figure out which political candidate to support. Your heart says one thing, your mind and skepticism says another. Trying to sort between all of the facts of their various positions on healthcare. Trying to figure out what's true and what's false, what's possible, what's not, what's right, and what's wrong. Or maybe, like many of the people on my Facebook wall when I asked, what's the dilemma that you're facing right now, you're asking the question, is it ethical to have children in an age like today? Bringing new life into a world dominated by climate crisis, polarization, and division, is it ethical to bring in new life? Or maybe you're planning that overseas vacation, and you have this nagging sense of the impact on the environment, knowing that that one overseas flight will be the single biggest part of your carbon footprint this year. And yet, oh, you want to go, and you want to see those people you care about. And don't you deserve it? What is true and what is false? What is right and what is wrong? Or maybe you're struggling in that moment where you just need some time away from your kids, and so you use the electronic babysitter, the screen. You give it to them because you need just 5 minutes away from their bickering and their insistence. And yet you know the impact of screens on their development. Is it right? Is it wrong? Maybe you just judge other people in restaurants for doing it, even if you do the same thing at home. Or maybe there's a more thorny ethical issue that you're struggling with, something that's going on at work. Maybe something in your workplace is not going correctly. Maybe there's some shady dealings that are going off, or questions that you want to raise, but you're afraid of the answers. You're afraid of what happens if you ask that question or you open that document, because you might bear the brunt of exposing an issue. And you're wondering, is it worth it? In the grand scheme of things, is it worth risking your own personal livelihood to expose a corruption, an ethical breach? Or maybe there's a lie that you're caught in, or that you keep telling a partner that you feel like is innocent and yet it keeps nagging you and you're wondering, is it right or is it wrong? And how do you know? These questions of what is right and wrong, what is true and what is false, this is the project of ethics. The project of trying to make sense of what it means to be in this human condition, of navigating a complex world with integrity and choosing the right, because it's not clear. I mean, I haven't got my manual in the mail. What about you? In the Western philosophical world, there are three main branches of ethics. And we're going to be exploring each of them in the next few months as a ways to kind of unearth the assumptions and the ways that each of us constructs our ethical world. And I thought for no particular reason that I would introduce you to these three major ethical schools through the example of why you should wash your hands. For no particular reason, of course. The first ethical school I want to introduce you to is the deontological school, or the one that focuses on duty. And this school would say this school of thought would say that you should wash your hands because it's the right thing to do. That you should wash your hands because there's a rule that says that you should do it. And that we know that that rule is correct because we can apply it to everyone in all circumstances, and it doesn't seem to contradict the rule itself. Make sense? This school of thought says that following the rules, no matter the consequences, regardless of the outcome, is the moral life. The next school of thought is the teleological school, which is a fancy word for basically the ends. This says you should wash your hands because we can safely say that we should wash your hands, even though it may be annoying and time-consuming, it produces the greatest good for the greatest number of. The outcome of washing our hands is a reduction in the transmission of disease. In this school of thought, we focus on the results of our actions, calculating and figuring out the results. In the first, we follow the rule, no matter the consequences. In this, we calculate. And the final school of thought is the school of virtue ethics. Now, virtue ethics is less concerned with the rightness or the wrongness of a specific action, and instead ask the question, what might we expect a virtuous person to do? And so the question we would ask ourselves is, would a virtuous person wash their hands? Now, usually we find the answer of what a virtuous action is in between two things, in between an excess, and deficiency. So we wouldn't expect a virtuous person to wash their hands constantly or always be washing. And we wouldn't expect a virtuous person to never wash their hands. And so we find it somewhere in the middle. No matter what ethical school you find yourself in, I do hope you're washing your hands. There's a great tweet that I saw on Facebook that says, I hope it's not like you're not just washing your hands during the global pandemic of COVID-19 or the coronavirus. It's actually good advice for most of us. But each of these ethical theories is a set of internally consistent logical premises that provides a course of action to those who follow it, a method for discerning ethical life. And each of them has their own leaps of faith, questions that they can't really answer. I mean, how do we exactly figure out what the greatest good is for the greatest number of people? How can we be sure? Who defines who the virtuous people are that we should try to emulate? How do we know what are the things that we should expect everyone to always do, regardless of consequences? Each of them has their own leaps of faith. And for most of us, we don't sit down one day and open a menu of ethical systems and turn to some sort of ethical waiter and say, I think I'm going to choose utilitarianism, please, and then lock it in for life. No, the process for most of us is much more emergent. It's the lived process of experiencing life's joy and injustices, its pain, its confusion, the clash of ideas and perspectives, and trying to discern from that, borrowing from various systems, emulating various people, struggling with various questions. I mean, an example of this process is that most of us learn early in our lives that there's something wrong with hurting other people. And yet we also learn soon enough that simply that as a rule is somewhat inadequate. Right? We learn that there's a difference between accidents and deliberate harm. We learn that there's a difference between harm that's done to protect versus harm that is done to have personal gain. In fact, in the Middle Ages, things like certain surgeries or medical procedures that would hurt the body, that would cause damage on the body, were considered unethical because they thought it was a violation. The surgeon would be causing harm. Each of us might have general core principles, but we generally take from many of these systems to construct how we act, consciously or not. And so our hope in this series is to explore each of these schools of thought, relevant ethical questions, help us bring from the unconscious into the conscious relevant ethical questions, the criteria, the values, and the perspectives that each of us is operating with. Because if we're conscious of the ways in which we are making decisions, the more we're able to make consistent ethical choices. So today I want to explore this branch of ethics, of virtue ethics. I'm not going to talk that much about Aristotle, but I do want to talk about the beach. So I want you to imagine with me for a moment that you're at the beach. You're laying down on a towel, the sun is coming down on you, you're hearing the waves, you've released any guilt about greenhouse gases, you're just enjoying the moment. And all of a sudden, you hear the word, help, come from outside. In that moment, something happens within you, right? You move from a state of rest to a state of action or alertness. And you start to feel something important, which is an internal sense of responsibility. It might be dialed down to one. You're trying to block it out mostly. You're like, someone else is probably going to respond to that. I don't need to. Or you might be like jumping up because you're a former lifeguard and you're like, I'm on it. But either way, there is a sense of internal responsibility that emerges. And the interesting thing is that that comes from without of you. I mean, the cause of it is without of you, but it actually emanates from within. That sense of responsibility isn't something that was forced upon you. It was something that was already there. One of my professors in undergrad wrote a book entitled How to Get Along with Other People. Great book. And he says this: for most part, moral rules arise in societies as a consequence of people's efforts to respond to problems, to care for others, to prevent social tragedies, to protect weaker members from exploitation. While rules may be passed down to us as obligations arising from the outside, these rules come into being because people were dynamized originally by an interior drive of responsibility. In these moments, when something occurs, we somehow are animated from inaction or rest to a sense of responsibility. And in the school of virtue ethics, they say that that sense comes from within. That the ground of moral knowing and insight is our personhood, that there's something inherent in us that can recognize virtue, correctness, how we should act. But it's not that simple. In college, I was walking one of my friends home. It was late at night, and we got to the point in our journey where my house was this way and her house was that way. And I turned to her and I said, it was great hanging out, I'll see you later, and I started to turn. And as I turned, I started to see that her body got really tense. Her face started to wrinkle a little bit, and she felt like it was like she was trying to say something to me. And so in that moment, I started to feel that pang of responsibility, like something was going on. And so I turned back, and I said, hey, what's going on? And she said to me, oh, I assumed you were going to walk me home because it's late at night. Now, that had never occurred to me. Living in a male body, walking at night in the city was never something that felt dangerous to me. And so it didn't occur to me that that was part of her world. In that moment, my world expanded. I turned to her and I said, I'm sorry, of course, yes. And I walked her to her house. Now, in that story, who I am, my character, determined my ability to do the right thing. My social location, the stories that I grew up with, the insights that I've had, the relationships I had cultivated, all of those things laid out a possibility, the possibilities from which I was to choose from. Who I was in that moment blocked me from seeing what was the ethical choice to at least offer to walk her home. Virtue ethic says that it is our character, our virtues, our capacities, our knowledge that determine our capacity to know the good and to consistently apply it. Aristotle said that the greatest virtue is courage because it enables us to live out the other virtues consistently. And so in that story, my social location determined my capacity to assess the very facts of the situation, to see the reality of danger or fear. Who I was determined my capacity to assess the very facts which were then needed to be able to determine the action that I should take in response to it. Now, in both these examples of the beach and walking my friend home, there's a complex chain of operations that goes on unconsciously for many of us as we are making an ethical choice. A complex set of operations that goes on from within us. The first is we assess the facts of the situation, what is going on. Then we assess the potential possible outcomes. What could I do? What is the right thing to do? And then I assess whether or not I'm actually going to do it. Now, for most of us, this assessment, this chain of operations in most circumstances happens in an instant. But some of the time, maybe more of the time than we admit, it breaks down. That our ability to assess the facts is compromised, that our ability to see the possible outcomes is mitigated, that our ability to actually say we will do the thing that we say is the right thing is challenged. It can break down at any of these steps. And they each build on each other. Leads us to the first insight of virtue ethics, which says that to do the good, we must know the good. Now, so much in our culture focuses us on the doing. And yet it seems trivial maybe to say this, but that first part of that chain of operations is very important. Very important for us to assess whether or not we actually know what is going on before we can actually act. That capacity to know the good in this world of virtue ethics, I said that they're less concerned with which is right, or what is right and what is wrong, because they say that no action inherently possesses the quality of rightness or wrongness. Instead, an act contains a direction. An act contains a trajectory of change in the world. So if we think about the action of stealing something, the trajectory of that action is pain and harm. But of course, it's not that simple, right? I mean, there are many factors that influence the trajectory of an action, like, for example, who is stealing? It would be different if you were stealing out of desperation than if you already had enough. It would be different if it was a small theft or a big theft. Or it would be different if you were, for example, robbing a bank that consistently evades corporate taxes. Right? The trajectory is influenced by context, by intentions, by consequences, and the social conditions that we find ourselves in. And thus, our capacity for moral knowing is about our ability to discern the trajectory of an action towards progress or decline, through its situations and intentions and the social structures it's found itself in, towards its goals and its actual consequences. And so to do this, we can ask ourselves to move through the three levels of good that Kenneth Melchin proposes. He says that we use this word good in colloquial ways to mean three things. Some of the time we use the word good to mean our personal interests are desired. It's good because I want it. Sometimes we say something is good because it follows the rules or conventions of the social order. It's good to follow the law because it's the law. the final good is to ask ourselves, those social structures that are there, those rules, those conventions that undergird our whole existence, are they themselves? Because sometimes we live much of the time in a society in which those conventions that order our lives are themselves disordered. And so for us to say it is good to follow them is to in fact lead to a trajectory of decline. And for us to be able to discern whether those structures of our society are in fact good, we have to be in relationships with the people who are most impacted by those social structures, to know the impact, the trajectory. To know the good, we must, to act, to do the good, we must know the good. To know the good and consistently act upon it is a skill. Like any endeavor, it is cultivated through our actions. For every time we act in the world, two things happen. The action ripples out, and we become the person who did the action. Every time we act in the world, our actions have their consequences, and then we become the person who did the action. Our character starts to shift. And thus, in the world of virtue ethics, the fundamental moral obligation we have is to take responsibility for developing ourselves as moral persons through moral action. Through slowing down this deliberation process of assessing the facts, of assessing the outcomes, and making the choice to develop our character so we can be the person who consistently chooses the good, much like an artist would hone their craft through practice. And then, we must help and participate in our society's endeavors to make it easier for people to practice those virtues, because we are influenced by society itself. So why, if I'm trying to sell you virtue ethics, why should you pick it up? The first is it can be difficult to live a life of simply applying rigid and sometimes unresponsive codes, of trying to discern what is right all of the time, calculating the consequences of any actions. Virtue ethics slows us down and focuses on the questions that undergird those actions. It brings out a humility of not knowing and a responsiveness to learning. It embraces a dynamism of life, of responding to the situations. And it doesn't focus on getting it right, but about contributing through our very living and the reformation of who we are to the progress of life. I heard this week that the United States has signed a peace deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan. And as I heard the news, I was just overcome with this sense that I have no idea if that's the right thing. In fact, the only thing that I can think of is that the right thing would be to build a time machine and go back before Western interference in the Middle East. But mine's not working. And so I was struck with this sense of I'm not sure what the right thing to do is. We're caught in a particular moment of history, with a complexity and a trajectory of progress and decline that is not of our own. It can be difficult and, in fact, overwhelming to think that we can make these ethical choices. And so I want to end with what I think are the moral foundations of Unitarian Universalism. Because within this faith, we will have people that draw from many different ethical and moral systems. But what connects them all are two things. First is a personal and a collective commitment to actually living an ethical life. It may seem to state the obvious, but there is something to be said about claiming the active process of living an ethical life, because what that says is that there is something meaningful in the concept itself, that the ethical life is not something that is beyond our capacity to discern or live or has utility for us. That it is something we can and must do together, even through its complexity. And the second moral foundation is this commitment to living an ethical life. The second is that within our ethical deliberations, we hold in balance this inherent worth and dignity of the human person and this interconnectedness between ourselves and this whole world that we are a part of. And that in our ethical deliberations, we must hold that tension with care. So friends, I don't have the answers. I feel like I am a beginner on this journey of life. But the beauty of church is that we get to be beginners together. And for that I say, amen. Amen.